two senators say they now have enough votes to pass a bill that would reform how the U.S. military handles sexual assault cases. Republican Senator Joni Ernst and the Democratic Senator Kristen Gillibrand say these reforms would take sexual assault cases out of the military chain of command and instead be handled by independent military prosecutors. For more on the current process, let's bring in Colonel Don Christensen. He's the former chief prosecutor for the Air Force and the president of Protect Our Defenders, a nonprofit dedicated to ending sexual assault and rape in the military. Colonel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tanya.
Let's talk about the problem. Can you walk us through how the military currently handles cases of sexual assault? If someone comes forward and says they've been sexually assaulted, what comes next?
What happens next is, by law, that allegation has to be turned over to the investigative services in the military, so like Naval Criminal Investigative Services or the Office of Special Investigation. They do an investigation. Once that investigation is complete, they give it to a commander of the subject of the investigation, the suspect, and then that commander either makes a decision to start a criminal prosecution process or decides not to do anything. They do get advice from a lawyer, but ultimately the chain of command is the person who makes the prosecution decisions that in the civilian world are made by lawyers.
And this is a conflict of interest because a commanding officer then can know the perpetrator.
Yeah, the commanding officer will always know the perpetrator because they work directly for them. No matter how fair a commander is, they will have developed an opinion about the person that's under investigation. And that could be a good opinion or a bad opinion, but it's going to impact their decision-making. And that's why, you know, in the civilian world, we have people outside of the investigation who makes the decision whether to prosecute or not.
How has this gone on so long where there's obvious conflict of interest?
Well, the military has opposed any reform that would take away the authority of commanders to make prosecution decisions. And this is something that's been debated at least for the last 100 years about how appropriate it is for commanders to have this decision authority. And they have been successful up to this point at convincing enough members of Congress that it's critical that they and they alone have prosecution authority.
Well, according to the Department of Defense, only 7% of cases in 2019 actually resulted in a conviction. I mean, that is a pretty low rate, not to mention how many cases likely go unreported. Is this part of the systemic reason why the numbers are so low? And really, does conviction even mean the perpetrator will be removed from the military?
Yeah, it is part of the reason that it's so low, because we have people making decisions that aren't lawyers, aren't prosecutors, and don't have a full understanding of the law or sexual assault and the impacts of sexual assault on a witness. There's a lack of faith in the survivors who are sexually assaulted that their case will be handled well by the chain of command, so they often don't come forward. When they do come forward, they often suffer retaliation. As a result, they will drop out of the process. And so when it's all said and done, a very small percentage of cases go to trial. And of the few that do go to trial, the military usually loses them.
Hmm. Well, as a former chief prosecutor for the Air Force, how important is it that the military bring in independent prosecutors?
It's critically important. Independent military prosecutors like myself, we've had years of experience dealing with sex assault crimes, talking to survivors, understanding what they've been going through and the challenges that brings to successfully prosecuting a case. A commander will never have that kind of experience. They have lots of other important jobs they do. And this is something that if we are ever going to get to a place where we have a better chance at justice, we have to do.
What else will the Military Justice Improvement and Increasing Prevention Act do?
Well, one of the most important things, for example, for Senator Ernst, is that it's also going to work on prevention side. And one of the things she's looking at is base security, more cameras to monitor what's going on in common areas. You know, we're really looking at two parts of this, the preventing anyone from committing a sex offense, but the accountability if they do, and marrying those two together is our best chance of driving down the numbers.
That's Colonel Don Christensen, former chief prosecutor for the U.S. Air Force and the president of Protect Our Defenders, a nonprofit aimed at ending sexual assault in the military. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
We want to share now one story of this problem in the military. Amy Marsh says she's a survivor of sexual assault by a member of the military. Her husband is part of the Air Force. She lived with him on Travis Air Force Base in California. And after an event with members of her husband's unit, Marsh says she was sexually assaulted by a high-ranking Air Force member who was supposed to be her husband's mentor. It took her months to report what she says happened to her, and she says Air Force leaders did little to help her. And Amy Marsh joins us now. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Amy, thank you for taking the time to share your story with us. I want to start first with your experience with reporting this crime, because we know from Colonel Christensen and others that many crimes, including rape and sexual assault, go unreported in the military. What was the process like? And did you have any understanding of the justice system beforehand?
I did not have any understanding of the justice system beforehand. To be completely honest, I didn't even really understand what sexual assault was when I thought that I had. The process was very difficult for me and my husband. People tend to focus on me because I was the victim, but we both were victims in this case. Yes, the actual incident had occurred to me, but to this day, he still has to go to work every day and relive the trauma that he had when he had realized who the assailant was. The assailant was someone who worked very closely to him, and he had really trusted this man with his life. Mm-hmm. And when this man had betrayed that trust, that destroyed any ability that my husband had to trust anybody. He vented and he confided in this man who had assaulted me. My husband did not know who the person was. I didn't tell my husband because I was afraid of the consequences that might come from that.
Colonel Christensen outlined the issues of having a commander specifically so involved in the process of an investigation. What ultimately happened in your case?
After the OSI investigation had been completed, the commander ultimately was their decision on what they were going to do. And the commander knew the assailant, who was a chief master sergeant who had 28 years of experience in the Air Force and had gained a reputation at that point. And the commander had also known me and my husband, who had maybe two years in the Air Force, who had not gained a reputation yet, and we were still learning. His liaison had told my SVC that he refused to bring me to court. And the next step in the military process was to go to his commander, which was the commander of the 18th Air Force at that time. And the 18th Air Force commander had also decided not to bring him to court-martial and only do administrative action. But the issue that I have with that is that neither of the commanders themselves took the time to explain to me, the victim, as to why they made these decisions. They had someone else explain this to me, and I never had a chance to ask them follow-up questions directly to that commander.
To say this has upended your life is kind of an understatement. You had to leave the state with your family. You have said before that your husband's career in the Air Force was ruined. How are you and your husband today, over 2 years since this assault? You mentioned that your husband is still struggling with this. How are you?
I have been healing. I've been doing intensive counseling, and our church has been phenomenal. And we have some mentors in our church who are retired chief master sergeants. So they understand the way the military works, and they understand what it's like to go through struggles similar to this. But my husband, I will say that he is having more issues than I am at this point, because he has to live with it daily. Basically, it's been a living hell for us for the last 2 years. And up until 3 months ago, we've really felt like there's no hope at all for us or for future victims. I was not aware that there was a bill in Congress currently, this possibility that decisions such as these could be in the hands of people other than the commanders. It brings us so much hope knowing that my voice can actually make a difference for future victims.
I'm so sorry that this has happened to you and your family.
What do you want members of Congress to know as they take on this proposal?
I would like them to listen to the stories of the actual victims. I would like them to know that this can really change the lives of people considering joining the armed forces. We have a 6-month-old baby right now, and if nothing changes, my husband and I are, we don't want my son to join the Air Force if things don't change. So if I had to speak to senators today, I would ask that they seriously consider this, because this is a real thing that affects people's entire lives. For our personal situation, my husband would have been a phenomenal squadron commander, just the way he's wired. But he will never have that opportunity because of our decision to do the right thing and to report the sexual assault that had happened.
Amy, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.